You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 11 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be dissecting the performances against CSKA and Bolton. We'll have Goal.com's Liverpool correspondent Neil Jones on the line. Dobbs back with his Legends profile and reserves review, and we'll be looking ahead to the massive trip to Anfield on Sunday.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 11 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I'm Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined by Dov and Dan as always. How are we, guys?
Very well, Steve. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. And you've just got back from Finland, I believe?
Yes, I have indeed. It's not very often that I come back to Scotland, and the place I was colder. That's a new experience for me. But it was a good holiday. I quite enjoyed myself.
Dan, been away anywhere, or has it just been sunny Bolton for you?
No, sunny Bolton for me. Yeah, I'm fine.
Fantastic. Well, let's kick off the show, guys, by looking at the game that's more fresh in the mind. It is, of course, the victory in Moscow against CSKA. Dan, it wasn't the most entertaining game to watch, was it? And I'd blame a lot of that on the 4-5-1 system. But at the end of the day, that has worked, as we saw in Besiktas when we go away from home in the Champions League. And Ferguson's made it clear he wants to get to 10 points. He's on 9 now with that victory. So I guess doesn't really matter about the formation, does it? We've gone there and we've got the result.
No, I mean, the 4-5-1, I thought it worked quite well. We kept possession well, limited them to a few chances, and away from home, especially on, you know, a plastic pitch, which, you know, it didn't have a massive effect on the game, but you're always aware of the potential danger while that provides. But no, I thought we played very well. John O'Shea being played, you know, defensive mid again, I thought he looked okay. Scholes was probably one of our better players, and I thought Valencia, he's getting confident now. He's taking players on, you know, and he's delivering crosses. They're not always brilliant ones, but at least he's there to do it. And, you know, his goal was icing on the cake as well.
And it's worth noting both wide players played really well. Certain sections of the media are sort of saying that Nani had another poor game, which I think's very unfair. I mean, we mentioned before the show started, we were talking about Lucas, weren't we, and how he's been made sort of a scapegoat for Liverpool. And Dan rightly said, Nani, you could say, is the same thing for United. And I don't think he played that bad last night.
It seems like it's his damn final ball. It's always about the final ball. He just doesn't seem to. He doesn't have it, and it's quite frustrating for players and stuff like that. But he can take on players and. Like, he can get past markers quite easily, so I just think if he works on his final ball, it'll be a massive weapon for us.
A lot of people would say that his crossing is one of the strongest parts of his game, though.
That's the thing. I don't think so. I think he doesn't get his crosses in early enough, and most of the time they don't really find a teammate when he's crossing the ball. But he can take on players all day, every day if he wants to. But I just think that final touch is lacking.
Decision making as well. I think sometimes Nani will take the option of taking on an extra player rather than playing the simple pass. And a lot of it was like Ronaldo, wasn't it? Ronaldo was exactly the same. There was times when he would take that extra man on when he should have delivered the ball, and eventually that came. And obviously he developed into one of the best players in the world. And let's hope that the same thing happens to Nani. But Nani linked up really well with Fabio, didn't he? I thought Fabio looked really good. That was his first game in the Champions League as well. And he was bombing up and down that left-hand side, obviously, till he got injured. Dan, did you think he had a good game? I know he got caught out a couple of times defending, but going forward, he was a real asset.
I mean, at points, he was playing almost left wing, wasn't he? But I thought he had a really good game. And like you say, I think his defending can obviously improve. Same with Raphael as well. But, I mean, going forward, there's... You know, he's probably up there. I'm not going to say he's not as good as ever, obviously, but I mean, going forward, he's got the same sort of mentality where he wants to get forward all the time. Obviously, other players are better at defending, but I'm sure that'll come, you know, with experience. And like you say, it's only his first game in the Champions League, so I think he did really, really well.
What about Fabio as a left winger, Dan? Could that be an option?
I'm not sure, really. I've not really seen him, you know, play sort of left wing. I've always seen him come from the back.
I think he's the perfect foil for as a replacement for Evra. I mean, Evra's really good at coming from deep, doing like 1-2s, and like he's got the skills as well to take on players if he needs to, and can put in a good ball. And Fabio seems like just exactly the same type of player, which is good to have in your squad.
He needs to put a bit more muscle on and stuff, and you know, he is only young, and that'll come as well. But I mean, he does need to bulk up, and I'm a bit worried about the. He seems like every time he plays, he picks up an injury or some sort of knock in training, and it's like, well, when's he going to overcome that? I'm hoping it's just, you know, due to, you know, his body just changing as he's growing up. I think I heard it was only cramp though on Wednesday night, so it's probably not too serious. But we don't want any more injuries really in the squad.
I think if he get a good run in the first team as well, like his brother had last season, that'd be really good for him.
And Dov, Gary Neville, that was consecutive games for him, obviously playing against Bolton and against CSKA Moscow as well. Does that show that he's still got something to offer, or is it just that this is his sort of swan song, if you like, season, where he's getting involved in the games that Ferguson knows he's not going to be under too much threat from the left winger?
Yeah, no, he's played well in the last two matches, and two games in a row as well. That I can't remember the last time that happened. I think he's there because he's solid defensively. I think he's a bit too old to be bombing up and down the right side like he used to. But he did make a few sort of forward runs and stuff like that. But I think his time as sort of first choice is over, and somebody should be either bought to replace him, which there has been rumours of, or one of the sort of younger players needs to come up and stake a claim for that slot. I just think it'll be used sparingly, shall we say.
And guys, I want us to just have a quick chat about Rio Ferdinand. Obviously, last week's pod we had Andy Mitten on the show, and we didn't really get a chance to discuss sort of more first team matters. But Ferdinand came into a lot of criticism, didn't he, for his performances for England and for United. He's got a few games under his belt now. Dan, are you thinking that's all in the past now? He's back to his best now, and there's not too much to worry about, or are you still sort of a bit worried? My personal opinion is that he sort of thinks about things too much now. You can see that he knows there's scrutiny on him at the moment, and he seems to take that extra touch, that extra sort of minute to think about what he's doing, whereas normally it would all come naturally to him.
No, I'm not worried at all. I'm sure he'll play on Sunday. And I think players have bad games from time to time. Rio just made some glaring errors in those times, you know. Sometimes forwards miss chances, midfielders don't pick out the men as they should. You know, defenders and keepers get it in the back when they make mistakes. Obviously the one against City was, you know, it was stupid. I don't suppose he'll do that again. But the one against, you know, the one against Ukraine for England, I thought, yeah, you should never let it bounce there. You know that when you're growing up as a kid playing football, don't let the ball bounce. You know, first time. It's just it was a bad mistake, you know. But like I say, these things happen.
Talking about mistakes, Dan, you mentioned goalkeeping errors there. I mean, the amount of stick Ben Foster was getting watching Milan Real Madrid yesterday. The amount of mistakes in that from Dida and Casillas was unbelievable.
Well, the Casillas one, I don't know what he was doing coming out so far. He didn't get either man or ball, did he? He was a bit daft, really. But I'm still behind Foster, although Van der Sar's done very well since he came in. And we do look a little bit more assured. Although against Bolton, the last, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, we were a bit nervy and under pressure at the back. But, you know, came through at the end, so it's not too much of a problem.
What did you make of Akinfeev? Obviously, we've been linked with him quite a lot, and I think Alex Ferguson's a big admirer of him. What did you make of his sort of performance, and do you think he's likely to come in at the end of the season?
I thought he played well. I think he's a really good keeper from what I've seen of him. I've seen him a few times for Russia and for CSKA, and he's impressed me every time he's played. But I think Ferguson's already said, hasn't he, that he's quite happy with Kuchak and Foster being the two that will be the likely replacements when Edwin van der Sar moves on. So I think he's quite happy with what he's got, but if it was my decision, and CSKA weren't asking for stupid amounts of money for him, I'd be quite happy to bring him in.
Yeah, I thought he looks all right. That Scholes shot, though, dipped in front of him, and he made a bit of a mess of that, but at least he kept it out. But yeah, he's the captain, isn't he, of CSKA? So I don't suppose they'll want to let him go too cheaply, but I think it's already been mentioned in the press and everywhere else that next season he's going to be leaving. So, you know, you never know. See how our keepers progress. But I think he's probably a mark up on Kuzak. We'll have to just wait and see about Ben Foster. But yeah, Akinfeev is a good goalkeeper. I wouldn't be disappointed to see him.
Just really quickly before we move on to the Bolton game, guys, Nemanja Vidic hardly set the world alight against CSKA, and he hasn't been in the greatest form over the last few weeks either. So Johnny Evans, he must be sitting on the bench thinking, I've performed really well since I've been in the team. Why is it that I'm not being kept in? It's, I suppose a lot of it you could say is reputation, and no one's going to argue that Nemanja Vidic and Rio Ferdinand are the strongest partnership we've got. But when the two of them aren't performing, surely Johnny Evans must be given the chance to impress even in the bigger games.
Well, I was going to say, I think in the big games you want to have your best players in, because they are your best players, and the Ferdinand Vidic partnership is their best partnership. So you would put them in. You would just do that. If they're both fit, then they both start, regardless, as far as I'm concerned, because they are that good together and as individuals.
I'm just glad they kept hold of Evans, though, because he could have gone last season, really, to Sunderland, couldn't he? But, you know, we kept hold of him, and he looks really, really good.
That's what I mean. Every time he's played, he's looked really assured, hasn't he? And he's not made a mistake, whereas Vidic and Ferdinand have made slight errors. I know there's been nothing drastic, is there? Ferdinand, even for his club, has done nothing sort of drastically wrong this season. But I don't know. When does Ferguson say that enough is enough and it's time for Evans to be given a prolonged run?
I think Evans will get he'll get games. I mean, we could potentially play like 60 plus games in a season, so Evans he'll get a run in the side. I just think, like, if Fergie basically wants qualification, so he's got his 9 points, you want your best players in there to sort of get qualification as quickly as possible. And I think sort of the minor mistakes that they have made, I mean, it's nothing too glaring, and John Evans, he'll get his game, so I don't really see. I just don't want to push him too hard, if you know, because he is young as well, remember, so you don't want him to like mentally break down the way Ben Foster has.
That's fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't say I'd like Evans ahead of Rio and Vidic at the moment, but I'm just sort of speculating as to when Ferguson might decide that it's time that Evans was sort of considered the first choice centre-half, but I certainly wouldn't consider that at the moment. But let's move on to have a brief look at the Bolton game as well, the 2-1 victory. Dan, do you class that as a sort of decent result? I mean, we had all the possession, didn't we? We got the 3 points, or are you a bit more pessimistic and sort of think, well, we should be dominating more in terms of the scoreline?
I thought, like you say, you know, in the match we dominated, but we just didn't take our chances. There were a few occasions where we could have scored more goals, but I mean, that happens sometimes, and Bolton played, you know, fairly well in the second half, and they got the goal when they deserved it. Evra got out, jumped at the back post, but I mean, apart from that, I don't think Bolton did much. I mean, they had that chance in the last minute, but I don't think they looked ever likely to sort of get the second goal and get the equaliser. But no, I thought it's the type of performance that you need to produce sometimes. People coming back from international break as well, you know, it doesn't help sometimes. And I thought we played all right, you know, and got the deserved victory. I thought Berbatov played very well. And I like the partnership with Owen and Berbatov together. I'm not suggesting we leave that way in Rooney, but I just think that them two together, I think they look really good. Owen, although he doesn't get in behind that much anymore, his movement's pretty clever, because I mean, sometimes he'd fake to go in behind and he'd stop, pull off a bit, and then he was in like 10 yards of space, and I think we got the second goal out of that when Owen dropped deep and played it wide. I think it's a good partnership. But
I was going to say, we were talking about Johnny Evans a second ago.
Yeah,
maybe you can explain it to me. How did he miss that chance?
I don't know, really. I mean, he's not right, though. He headed it down, Jaskalainen has made a good save, but if he puts it in the corner, it's an easy goal, isn't it? But
I couldn't believe it.
Johnny Evans couldn't believe it at first when I interviews after the game.
Oh, well, he hit the target. I mean, that's the main thing. If he headed it wide, you could maybe have a bit more of a go. But it was a good save. But talking about saves, Edwin van der Sar back in the team, guys. That's obviously fantastic news. And I suppose that helps the centre-halves as well, knowing that they've got a confident keeper of the experience of van der Sar. That's surely going to help them progress. But two victories on the spin without Wayne Rooney. That's a good sign, isn't it, that we can cope without him. I mean, Dan mentioned the Berbatov-Owen partnership there, that he's particularly fond of that. But I just think it's good to see that we're not having to rely on Wayne Rooney, which I must admit, start of the season without Cristiano Ronaldo, I thought Wayne Rooney is going to have to really be the key man this season, and it shows that we can win without him.
Yeah, it was also Valencia was looked really good. It's the first time he's actually looked of a certain standard since he's actually came to the club and obviously got the goal as well. But yeah, I'll be honest, I'm a bit apprehensive about him as a player. I don't think he is of the quality that we need. But his performance against Bolton, like, if he puts in a few more of them, then he could maybe sort of allay my fears a little anyway.
Let's have a look at the emails now. We've only got two this week. We'll start with Sean Fields. He's mentioned that Berbatov, he thought he was poor against CSKA Moscow. And he asks if Dov can put together a Legends profile for Kevin Moran. Can that be arranged, Dov?
It will be arranged. I shall add it to my list. So look out for that in the coming weeks.
Fantastic. And our second email is from Nathan Hornsby. And guys, he wants to know who looks more excited to score, Dimitar Berbatov or Antonio Valencia. I mean, they both keep their emotions quite close to them, don't they, when they score a goal. I mean, I'd be absolutely elated if I score for Manchester United, but with those two, it doesn't seem to be, they don't seem to be as bothered.
Well, I think it was the Berbatov against Stoke, he let out a little bit of a celebration. He did score the week after. Sunderland, wasn't it? He, you know, he seemed all right to score that goal. You know, Valencia, on the other hand, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, really. Like you say, I mean, if I'd have scored a goal for Man United, you know, I'd be pretty happy about it, but no, each to his own, I guess. Might be just different types of characters.
Maybe he was just overcome with emotion and he didn't know what to do.
He didn't even smile, though.
Maybe it's Ecuadorian customs not to smile when you score. I don't know.
It might just be like, oh yeah, I've scored a goal, you know, that's what I'm sort of paid to do. I don't know.
I seem to remember from his Wigan days, though, he used to celebrate, didn't he? I'm sure I remember him scoring an absolute screamer. Can't remember who it was against, but it was about 30 yards out. He smashed it in, and pretty sure he celebrated then. So, I don't know. Dan, you mentioned off air that maybe it's to do with a pressure thing, that he feels under so much pressure that it's just like he can't afford to celebrate, if you like. He doesn't want to lose concentration, I don't know.
I'm sure it'll come. Next time he scores, we'll keep a close eye on it.
Well, it's that time of the podcast now for reserves and under-18s review this week. Dov, you've got quite a few games to catch up on as we had the international break over the last couple of weeks. So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, well, it's just going to be reserves review this week because there's too many games. I mean, I'm on holiday. But first, there was a game played all the way back on the 6th of October, which we haven't spoke about. And that was a 1-0 victory for United Reserves against Everton. It was away, and it was Makeda that scored the goal on the 56th minute. Everton, in that game, really offered nothing going forward. And basically, for Makeda's goal, he laid the ball off to Joe Dudgeon, who then sort of burst through from the defence. And then gave the ball to Ekrem, who played the ball, a neat through ball, to Makeda, who carried on his run. Carlo Nash, who was in the Everton goal, got a hand to it, but because the shot was so perfectly placed, went in the bottom corner, so that gave United the victory as well. And also, just to let everybody know, that was Van der Sar's first game back as well from injury. United also played a game against Oldham Athletic in the Manchester Senior Cup, and that was away, and we won that 3-0, with goals coming from Fabian Brandy, Houston, and Josh King. Again, this was another one where basically we dominated. Gabriel Obertan also played in this game, and he was very impressive in the 45 minutes he played as well. And more recently, there's also been a friendly all the way up here in Scotland, which I would have went to if I was in the country. And that was a 4-0 victory over Clyde. It was a Manchester United 11, but it was obviously the reserves that played. As an own goal by Stuart, Fabian Brandy got another one. Raphael scored and Magnus Ekrem got a penalty in the 89th minute. Basically, the reason for this game was Clyde have got some financial problems and Alex Ferguson promised to send a squad to Broadwood, to Clyde Stadium, to basically raise funds. Tosic was there, Obertan was there. Obviously, you had Raphael, Ekrem and such like that. Some of the new breed as such sort of played there. And it was another sort of dominating performance from United. Again, with Obertan and Tosic playing well. And Ekrem as well. Yeah, he seems to be coming along quite good. So it's been lots of victories in the last few weeks. So hopefully we'll get up to date. And the next game for the reserves is tonight against Blackburn Rovers. So obviously game's not happened yet. So we shall bring you all the details of that on next week's show.
And Dov, hopefully we'll be catching up with Tony or Mr. Mujak for next week's show as well.
We will be catching up with him very, very soon. I am trying to get a hold of him to get him on the show, and he can sort of fill us in on some of the individual performances and such like that over the last couple of weeks as well.
Fantastic stuff. Well, before we go back to Dov for his Legends profile, let's introduce the Cabbage and Player of the Week for this week. Dan, Player of the Week, it's been quite a few, two victories, so who would you pick out?
I'm going to go with Valencia. 2 goals, 2 games. Can't argue with that. Good performances.
Dov?
Yeah, Valencia as well. Good to see him sort of put in a performance worthy of the red and white of Manchester United.
Well, I'm going to have to give it to Valencia as well. I mean, he's got his first goal for the club and second goal for the club, of course. And he's been the standout performer. So it's a hat-trick for Valencia this week. Cabbage, pretty tough one this one. Dov, start with you this time.
I did find it quite tough thinking of one, but I think I might give it to Vidic just because he looked a bit tentative, a bit shaky against CSK, and that's I don't really like to see your centre backs looking as nervy as he did at times, so he'd be my cabbage this week.
Dan?
Reluctantly, I'm going to go with Anderson. I don't think he's done anything special last time. I've been a bit harsh on him this season, but I think I'm expecting a little bit more this season. He needs to score more goals, have more shots, and he's not really doing it for me. So, Anderson, yeah. What about you, Steve?
Well, you've stolen mine there, Dan, because I was going to give it to Anderson. But I'll change it about a bit. I'll give it to Berbatov, which I know is quite harsh because he played really well against Bolton. But just for his general sort of body language and sort of didn't look interested against CSKA. And it's harsh, isn't it, when you think about it? Because he did set up the goal for Valencia. So very harsh, but mainly for his body language, I'm going to give it to Dimitar Berbatov.
Could have given him a cabbage for that dive that he did, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point as well. Yeah, so that can contribute towards it as well. I mean, was that a dive? Just... we didn't discuss it earlier.
I think there was a little bit of contact, but he shouldn't have gone down like he did.
Right then, let's get Dov back with his Legends profile. Dov, who is it this week?
Harry Stafford is a legend at the club and a very, very important man in the history of Manchester United. He was born in Crewe in 1869 and worked as a boilermaker and also played for his local side, Southport Central. In 1892, he signed for Crewe Alexandra, obviously his hometown team, and played an important role there. They had a good FA Cup run at the end of the 1894-95 season. And then it was transferred to Newton Heath, who were to become Manchester United, in 1896. It's quite a good sort of story, the way this sort of worked back in like 100 plus years ago. He was actually offered a job working for Lancashire and Yorkshire Railway on the understanding that he would play for Newton Heath. So obviously he accepted and joined the club in 1896. He was quickly appointed the captain and was sort of like a driving force for the club. And it has been said by people back in the day, he was noted for his snappy dressing and had a liking for white hats and brilliantly hued waistcoats, so maybe a David Beckham of his day, something like that, who knows. He was a fullback as well, that was the position he played, and on his debut for Newton Heath in 1896, they beat a team called Darwin 4-0, so that was a good start. When obviously the team Newton Heath changed to Manchester United, he was still the captain, so he was the first captain of Manchester United. But the little story which sort of cements his importance to the club is when Newton Heath, obviously towards sort of the turn of the century, they were in a lot of financial trouble and they were sort of trying to raise funds to sort of keep the club afloat as such. And there was a fun sort of raising bazaar, and Harry took his dog Major, it was a St Bernard, to this bazaar, and Major had a collection sort of box strapped to his neck. Obviously the dog got a little bit bored and went walkies, so nobody knew who he was. It was later found with a local businessman who owned the Manchester Brewery Company, and this guy was called John Henry Davies. Okay, and basically after Harry found that his dog was with John Henry Davies, he said, "Oh, can I have you? Can I have my dog back?" But Davies actually took a liking to the dog, and it's said that he wanted to sort of keep the dog and give it to his daughter as a birthday present. And basically what happened is Harry sort of said, "Okay, you can do that. You can keep my dog, but you've got to invest money in Newton Heath so that basically the club doesn't collapse." This was duly done, and in a way, Harry actually saved the club from extinction. So he, in a sense, created the Manchester United that we know today. So yeah, it's a true legend. He played over 200 games for the club, obviously, club captain and such like, and spent a lot of his time fundraising as well. And he did retire a year after the formation of Manchester United in 1903. And basically, after obviously the creation of Manchester United, they retired. He said that he's done. A quote from him: "I have done everything in the best interests of the club." So basically, he was Manchester United / Newton Heath through and through. After he retired, he then sort of ran hotels in Wrexham, places in Wales and stuff like that, and then also moved to Canada where he had a hotel there. But yeah, first captain of the club and essentially saved them, so he is a legend in my eyes, certainly.
Definitely a legend. He contributed towards the saviour of the club and the creation of Manchester United from Newton Heath, so a lot owed to him there, and a fantastic legend's profile. Thanks a lot for that, Dob.
RedCafe.net, the leading Manchester United forum.
Well, I'm delighted to say that on the line now we have Neil Jones, who is a Liverpool fan, so he's braving the RedCafe.net podcast to join us. It's fantastic stuff. Neil, thanks a lot for coming on the show. You're the Liverpool correspondent for Goal.com, and well, tell us, what is going wrong at the moment? It's four defeats on the trot for Liverpool. A lot of people are calling for Benitez's head. What's your view on it?
Yeah, I think they're being a bit premature with the calling for Rafa's head at the moment. It's a bad run, obviously. It's well documented. 22 years since we've had such a bad run. April 1987 was the last time we lost four in a row, and there has been a few mischievous things suggesting that it'll be five in a row on Sunday. But I think, you know, this game on Sunday is probably, I think, the biggest of his reign, of Rafa Benitez's reign.
And where's it gone wrong this season, though? What would you say has been the biggest problem? I mean, is it that Benitez hasn't signed the right players? Would you say it's the maybe the board, the players are looking at the board and thinking there's no sort of real stability there? Is it team selection? What is it?
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint one thing because, you know, obviously we've lost Javi Alonso and Alvaro Arbeloa, which were two, you know, regulars last season. But I wouldn't say that, you know, Arbeloa for Johnson, I think that's an upgrade, personally. Alonso, yeah, he was a big loss. But you look at you've got Mascherano, you've got Gerrard, you've got, you know, I mean, Lucas is a bit of a scapegoat sometimes, but I don't think he's as bad as people say. It just seems like, I think, just a bit of a negative vibe come across the club, and it's dragged his life down. I mean, it hasn't helped. We spent 40 million, I think we spent exactly in the summer. and, you know, 17 or 18 million of it's been laid up with an ankle injury. You know, Kyriakos was very much a bargain basement sign, and even he's got injured now, and Johnson is the other one. We probably needed a couple more beyond that to really push on.
And you mentioned Xabi Alonso there, Neil. Alberto Aquilani's come in, as you mentioned. You went and watched him for Liverpool reserves the other night. He got 15 minutes. Is he the replacement for Xabi Alonso, or would you say that they're sort of completely different players?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're completely different players. They both like to pass the ball. Even in his cameo at Tranmere on Wednesday night, he showed that he can pass with either foot. I think he plays a lot further up the pitch than Alonso. Alonso is certainly one who'd, almost like a quarterback, he'd go and get it off the centre defenders and look to play forward. I think Aquilani will work a bit higher up, and it'll be interesting to see what that means for Steven Gerrard, whether it means he goes to a more orthodox position or whether he stays in his sort of support striker role.
Ignoring many expletives that you'd probably say, Neil, what would you say to any United fan that would sort of turn around and say, without Steven Gerrard and Fernando Torres, as arguably you could say was proved the other night, Liverpool were an ordinary side?
Sometimes it is hard to disagree with that, but I would say I'll say it's above ordinary. I think you look at ordinary and you think Fulham, you think teams like that, they are ordinary sides. They're not terrible, but they're not great. We've got a world-class goalkeeper. I think despite the publicised slip-ups this season, we've got a good defence. We've got good players in defence, certainly Carragher. We've got Agger back now, who's a very good defender. We've got Aurelio, who had a good season last year. Johnson's a class act. We've still got Mascherano in midfield. And even you know, the support cast, if you like, up front, has got goals and a bit of quality in it. Cal can get you the goal and do you the shift. Benny Yoon's got a bit of quality. Even Riera's got a bit. So I'd say we're certainly without Gerrard and Torres, we're a good side. Not a title challenging side.
Fair enough. And Neil, I know Dan's looking forward to this answer. If you had to pick one player from the United team, who would you pick to sort of improve that Liverpool side?
Improve that Liverpool side? Wayne Rooney, isn't it? You know? I don't know how we'd get him in the shirt, because it's quite tight anyway, isn't it? He'd be kicking and screaming, but I tell you what, I'd love him at Liverpool. And I know Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher feel exactly the same. Can you imagine Wayne Rooney running behind Torres and with Gerrard supplying him? I think it'd be a bit special.
Right, and just focusing on Sunday's game now, Michael Owen, tell me, what would you do if he scores in front of the cop?
I can't do anything. I'm in the press box, so I've got to keep a very unbiased opinion. I'm not even allowed to wear my shirt on Sunday. But I think for his own good, I think he's best just turning around and going to the centre circle and suppressing his joy, because I don't think there's going to be a very favourable reception for him when he goes back, certainly.
Scenes of Adebayor, I'm sure if he did do anything overzealous, if he did score. But you mentioned earlier, Neil, that you know that it really is a massive game, not just for Liverpool, but for Benitez's reign as well. So how do you see it going then? Just finally, what would be your prediction?
Prediction? I always feel at Liverpool that you can never write them off. Manchester United are the same. You know, you know with Manchester United, if you have a bad run of results, you're always expecting the next one to be the one where they turn it around. Certainly, you never think, oh, they'll carry on losing, they'll carry on drawing, they'll carry on dropping points. I always think Liverpool will win going into the game, certainly. It'll be a very tough game, but at the same time, Manchester United have had a tough trip out to Moscow. I know a few players are rested. They've got a few injuries themselves, so they're not, you know, infallible by any means. I think draw on the narrow Liverpool win.
Thanks a lot for coming on the show, Neil. I know it must have been quite difficult with the way Liverpool, the results that you're picking up at the moment. So cheers for coming on and good luck for Sunday.
Okay, I'm not even going to say good luck, but yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that was Neil Jones, Liverpool correspondent for Goal.com. Guys, massive, massive game, isn't it? Sunday, Liverpool away. How's it going to go? I mean, they're going through an awful run of form, as Neil was talking about. The reasons for that are difficult to pinpoint, but we should go there definitely as the team in form and the favourite, surely.
Sure, indeed. I mean, we went, I think, is that the four and a bounce we've got? And Liverpool, I can't remember the last time they won a game. Let's hope plenty of beach balls will be making their way from the crowd as well. That would be quite funny. but yeah, I think is it Steven Gerrard out as well, I believe. So
he's definitely a doubt. I don't know if he's out, Torres well must surely be a doubt. But
yeah, I think going at the game, we should. We're picking up results at the end of the day. Is it like we are sort of grading them out, and I know it's away, and I hope Michael Owen starts and scores. Yeah, I think that would be fantastic.
And Dan, how do you see it going? We've mentioned it many times now, but let's talk about it again. Liverpool, they're on an awful run at the moment. Four games without a win. We should be full of confidence and coming off the back of two really good results. We even had the chance to rest up the likes of Giggs, Evra, Rooney. They didn't travel to Moscow, so that should all help, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game. I'm quite excited by it. I think that we'll end up winning the game, but we've also got to be a bit cautious. I mean, saying before, you know, that it's a good game for Liverpool to come into. I mean, I know they've lost four on the trot, but they don't need any more motivation to beat United. And it, in a funny way, you know, if they beat us, it could turn their season around. So we've got to remain cautious, but I think we're favourites, like you say. I hope we go there playing 4-4-2 and properly go at them, because they're not the best defensively at the moment. So why don't we test them? I hope Ferguson does that. I think he will. I'm looking forward to getting the victory.
And guys, can I ask you for score predictions, considering Liverpool last season? I seem to remember backfired ever so slightly.
I'll be brave enough. I'll stick my neck on the line. Well, if I was a betting man, lads, I would go with 2-1 to United, away win. Owen with the winner.
not the emphatic scoreline you predicted last season. What was it,
4-0? I was nearly right, just the wrong team.
That's true, very true, and it's slightly different. Dov, what's your prediction for this week?
My prediction would be slightly more reserved. I think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be 1-1. I think it's at Anfield, so they'll have obviously the home crowd support, and they're in a bit of a mini crisis sort of. So they'll be wanting to show, well, basically Manchester United and the rest of the teams in the Premier League that they're not as rubbish as they seem to be in the last couple of weeks. I think a draw would be a correct score, so we'll see.
I think a lot of it hinges on whether Gerrard and Torres start, to be honest. I know Neil earlier on suggested that Liverpool don't just rely on the two of them, but to be frankly honest, I think they do in a way. I think they're huge players. I mean, we've proved we can cope without Rooney. We've proved that we can cope without Ronaldo as well this season, and I think Gerrard and Torres are so big to Liverpool that if you take them out, I don't think they're half as strong as they would be with them in. So I think a lot hinges on that. If they both play and they're both sort of fit enough to play and they're not struggling like Gerrard did the other day, had to be brought off early, I think it'd be a draw. But I think if one or both of them don't play, I think we've got it in the bag. I think we've got a victory. So that's how key I think they will be. But yeah, that's just about your lot for this week's redcafe.net podcast. Remember, send all your feedback, questions and comments to podcast@redcafe.net, and we'll be sure to read them all out in next week's show. Sign up to the Facebook group too if you haven't done that already. Well, thanks a lot for listening to episode 11, and stay tuned for episode 12 next week.